אסתר פרק ז' ויבוא המלך והמן לשתות עם אסתר המלכה. Now this of course is a very different language. Now it's with her. With her is a whole new thing. She didn't get that in the first party. They were sitting there, but they weren't drinking with her. They were at her party, but they weren't with her in that party. ויאמר המלך לאסתר גם ביום השני בבשתי היין. Now, the king says to Esther, but the difference between what he says to her and who he says it to is very clear. He says it to Esther, but he tells her, Ma shelatech Esther Hamalka. So he's calling her Esther Hamalka, but in his mind he's talking to Esther, not to Esther Hamalka. He doesn't give her any of the standing that a Malka would. She's Esther HaMalka because she's his queen. But, I mean, it's just Esther as far as he's concerned. And, of course, she's Esther because he still has no idea that she has any identity of herself. She is still Miss Innocent, ready to be whatever you dream her to be. No problem at all and represents no threat. And has promised, at least in a hint, that she's finally going to tell him who she is. So what is it you would like, Esther Amalka? Tinaten lach, it will be given to you. Uma bakashatech, chatchatzi amalchut v'teyas. Once again, making sure she doesn't get involved in any politics. None of that chotzet amalchuto business, right? I'm sure APEC hasn't paid you off, I should hope. Vata'an Esther Amalka. Esther, not Esther. Esther HaMalka answers, from which Chazal say that it was at that moment that she told him who she was. She really was Esther HaMalka. She told him the whole story. She told him who her grandfather was. Not only did she tell him who the grandfather was, but of course she prepared the way for his own sudden recognition of what he's gotten involved in. And that was essential. He needed to understand what she was in terms of Haman as well. And that's going to be so much a part of the whole story. Because what's happened is he's thrown in his lot with a guy who happened to have been born because her great-grandfather didn't do his job of knocking him off in time. That's a whole different way of looking in his mind at what's important and what's unimportant. His queen is a real queen. This guy is basically an accident. That's all that he is. You know, it was just like, you know, the birth control didn't work. I mean, that's all you are, Mr. Haman. A horrific fifth generation accident. I don't understand how I ever got involved in this. That is the reaction that she's aiming for. And he is completely taken by this, as we'll see. Everything changes instantaneously. And so she says, Imatzati chen b'nei ha-melech. Well, now, if you really like me, v'imal ha-melech tov, and if this appears good to you, then tinaten li nafshi b'sheila, all I'd like to do is live. Is that okay? If I could live, could you give me the right to exist? Is that too much to ask? That's my personal request, and my bakasha that I'd like to see out of this. I want to have a people to belong to. Rami b'bakashati. Because there ought to be some level of reality, you know. But what has happened is, kinim karnu ani v'ami, la shmid la rog la abid. I mean, even if you're selling people, do you sell them to make soap out of them, or do you sell them to work in factories? It would be fine if ilu lavadim l'shvachot nim karnu echarashni. I wouldn't even have brought it up. I mean, what would I come to you to complain about the fact that perhaps we were sold into slavery? It's not your business. I mean, yes, maybe you got caught up in something, but I would have shut up. Kien atzar shove benezik hamelech, which has many levels of meaning. The simple meaning is, look, the problems that I'm creating, I really understand. I am making life miserable for you by asking you this because, now how are you going to deal with all of this? I mean, I understand what you look like. You look like something of an idiot. Not only an idiot, vicious idiot. All of a sudden, it has something to do with you, and what was a morally neutral, or perhaps you never knew, or the whole thing was very not only ambivalent, but was also completely opaque. No idea really what was going on. No, nobody told me anything. You're going to have to deal with now and face up to the fact that it all comes from you, not to mention the fact that we're going to have to figure out a way out of the problem, which is not simple, because you idiot, you gave him the ring to do whatever he wanted. And all of this is ringing between the lines. So that I understand that it really wouldn't be worth talking to you if we weren't dealing with something that is madness. You understand? It's madness. It's one thing to sell, and it's a, there's a beautiful medrash that says, look, Moshe Rabbeinu said, he said to us, what's going to happen? V'nimkartem, you're going to be sold to oyveichem, you know, l'avadim l'shvachot ve'en koneh. He didn't say we'd be sold to be turned into soap in gas chambers. And this is what you got involved in. I mean, he was telling us the worst that it could be. You know, this is basically what you have achieved. And I wouldn't mention it if it wasn't that. But you understand that this is historically mad. And it's all going to come back to you. Now you're going to have, I would have mentioned it otherwise. Because lots of people have been sold into slavery. The other level of the meaning, as Chazal said, "Ein hatzar shove b'nezek hamelech," is that whoever made this happen didn't care at all about what he was costing you. I mean, who ever heard of such a thing? If you want to get rid of a problem in the kingdom, you don't murder the people. Turn them into workers. Make money off of them. But this entire thing was so gratuitous. It was clearly an expression of one man's obsessive hatred in which your requirements meant nothing. So besides, and then the two levels, of course, interact. So besides what this does for you in history, the bloodthirsty madman, I didn't even register. It made absolutely no sense. And here he was, and he talked you into it, didn't he? It was having to do with somebody like that. Here's where Chazal see the complete flip. What do you mean, Vayomer HaKashverosh Vayomer L'Ester HaMalka? Vayomer HaKashverosh L'Ester HaMalka? No. There was a sudden change of consciousness. He started to talk, and he talked the way he always talked, in which he wouldn't talk directly to her. He would talk so that she would hear, or somebody could translate it to her, whatever, but she's just a commoner after all. All of a sudden, he's talking to her. And he's accepting that she is, in fact, Esther Amalka, not Vayomer HaMelech Esther, with which he began. He is talking to Esther Amalka. So the Gemara says, yes, until now he would never talk to her as Esther Amalka. Now he realizes, oh my God, she really is a queen. I mean, we're not talking about somebody like me, some cheapo politician who's bought his way into the kingdom. This is like the real stuff. Forget about this Vashti kook. I mean, that's just a century old. We're talking about something that goes back 2,000 years. Damn, didn't even know what I was playing with. So now he's like, oh my gosh, this is like whatever I thought I had in Vashti, and she was lording it over me. I got everything I could want now. I have the real thing, and this Haman guy that's been on my mind, I mean, she makes him look like a total idiot. This is great. Well, obviously, it had nothing to do with me, this horrible thing. Me, who's ever is who? Who could possibly? I mean, this comes as an utter shock, Esther. I cannot believe that your life is endangered. The entire nation is endangered. What type of madman could possibly have had a heart that could be filled with such outrageous insanity? Hashem el holy bala sot came to attack my own dear precious queen.
Cheap politicians through and through.
Yes, but what's amazing in the next pasuk is that she couldn't allow that to be. Because if she did, then what would have happened would have been a playing a game. This is the moment of exposure. There are no more games to be played. Either there's going to be facing up to reality, which is what all of this is about, or we're going to be left with playing games. But remember that the whole idea of the Megillah all along is game playing that has got to end. There's got to be an internal reality that's going to out, it's going to come out. And this is the theme throughout, the theme of God's playing games, the theme of the masquerades that we do, the absurdity of rape playing games, of Vashti playing games, of Ahasuerus pretending that all of this is normal. The whole thing is one vast insanity from beginning to end, which is part of why it's written as a farce. It's absolutely crazy. All of this absurd off with his head and shoot the person that's coming in and rape all the girls and make a beauty, a Miss Universe. And I mean, what? How have we tolerated this? What kind of reality is this that your kingdom has turned into? Murphy Jones, my rear end. What is it really about? So she can't let this go by. And remarkably, the Gemara says that she pointed to him. And she said, Ish tsar v'oyev, it's you, you rotten bastard, it's you. And a malach came and pushed her hand away so that it pointed to Haman. And we're medayik this from the Lush, Ish tsar v'oyev, Haman hara hazeh. I mean, if it's hazeh, and you're pointing to him, so then you just say, Ish tsar v'oyev hazeh. Obviously, there's a tikkun at the end in which he's throwing in, I mean, Haman. Right, so there's that change. Now, obviously, he picked up on the change. She needed to make it very clear that, look, I'm willing to go along with the agreement of Tikkun, but not to pretend that nothing has happened. The fact is, either you're going to take responsibility for this, or nothing is going to change. So you've been taken in by Haman, now you'll be taken in by me. And tomorrow will be Mordechai, and the next guy is going to play you with the little marionette that you are and that you've been. Don't you see what you look like, Mr. Marionette? This is the real theme that we pointed out before. Vayi b'nei Achashverosh. The story really revolves around Esther's relationship with Achashverosh, not her use of Achashverosh, not her hatzola from Achashverosh, but her incredible ability to have made Achashverosh responsible. Which is why at the end of the Megillah, it is so important to have a separate line as a chapter. And yes, Achashverosh put taxes back on. That change is an amazing change. Because the whole thing started off with, I will buy my way into your favor. No taxes. Read my lips. The new tax-free holiday for Esther. Ba-ba-bam. And then it's the gifts. So now we're giving out welfare tickets with Esther's picture on them. And it had to close with, I'm not scared of taxes if the government needs taxes. And he puts taxes on the yayam as if like, this is important. Of course it's important. It's the complete change from a person who's manipulative into a person who takes responsibility. It's exactly the same in modern politics. If somebody gets up there and says, look, it's not going to be easy. I offer you only blood, sweat, and tears. If it's a moment at which people are willing to really see that it's that or forget it, the whole culture is kaput, then that's what can motivate people to become real and to become a kingdom. It's Esther who makes things real. So in pointing at him, she really intended to go all the way. When the Gemara says that the Malach came and pushed her hand away just at the right minute, so to speak, in other words, she was caught with the recognition that there needed to be a gradual entry for him, that she couldn't do that. And so she switches it to Haman Hara Hazeh. But Haman Hara Hazeh in a Megillah that is all about phony tova is extremely powerful. Nobody has ever said anything bad yet. The word bad hasn't come up. Throughout this Megillah, up until this time, all we hear about is phony toves. If you think about it. Again and again and again. Ketov lev ha-melech be'ayin. Im ha-melech tov yetzei dvar malchut lefanav. I mean, this is murder, you understand. L'ruta ha-tova mimena. And it's all about tovot mar'eh. Tovat mar'eh. Im ha-melech al ha-melech tov yikatev la'abdam. Genocide. Is also good. Do with the Yehudim katov beinecha. It's a great idea. Wipe them all out. So, when we get here, I mean, Haman Hara has this, the first time anybody is called a spade a spade. And she does this pointing at him. And this is the first moment in which the farce of the Megillah really begins to crumble. Because we've put up with an awful lot. You can imagine the day will come when there will be, I'm sure, in the modern Orthodox community, a very strong reaction against teaching Esther, or certainly allowing children to participate in Queen Esther games. I mean, it's bad enough that you mutilate your sons, but training your daughters to be victims of rape and pretend that it's pretty is outrageous. We're not comfortable with that
especially
kind of thing.
Today, on International Women's
Absolutely. Today is the day. I think you're supposed, in Israel, you're supposed to, because of International Women's Day, you're not supposed to murder your wife today. I saw that somewhere.
Oh, why didn't they tell me?
Yeah. It's like pretty standardized behavior around here. So here she is actually calling Ra-Ra. And we now recognize for the first time that all of thinking back, oh my gosh, somebody actually said the Ra word. And now you're thinking back all of the things that have happened until now that were just horrific. And we've been pretending that they're so Gilbert and Sullivan-y again. You know, it's just, it's really cute. Off with his head. That's really cute. It's like, if the A-team would suddenly end up actually killing people, it would be a disaster. Right? The only thing that makes it so hilarious is the fact that nobody ever gets knocked off. But here in the Megillah, we're talking about genocide. That's not exactly the Mikado. And she is the first one who forces him to acknowledge that. And remember the context, in the context of his discovery, who she is, his own sense of history, the way in which the very man that he's come to suspect of everything evil is suddenly called evil, has dragged him into evil, and he's ended up with the tail end of a mistake of birth control, and instead didn't even realize that there he was with the real thing all along. The combination of this is the first time that he really absolutely loses in his anger. It all comes out. Remember, there never was a time in which he wasn't angry and resentful. What we had before was that the kishoch chamat hamelech acher, it was under control, but he was an absolute tempest inside all the time. It was a volcano that was ready to explode because of his dependencies, because of the fact that he sensed how he had made a fool of himself, because there's a limit to how long people can really live in a farce. And it was just dying to come out if we accept that Ahasuerus was actually a great man on certain levels. So that when we talk about, yes, he's a total idiot, and Melech Tipeshaya, you have exactly the same darga of Pesachim and Gemara, which is saying Melech Chochamaya. And that's part of the farcical aspects of it. He's a mass of contradictions, historically as well. In many ways, he's looked at as a complete total ass, but only because of things that happened to him. You know, a bad storm that wipes out a fleet. I mean, you know, this could happen to anybody. So, I mean, on the one hand, he did end up withdrawing Xerxes because of the things that went wrong with his campaigns and so on. But when he was successful, he was exceedingly successful. So he's really historically a figure that can be read in different ways. Here, she pushes him to moments of reality. And HaMelech kam b'chamato mimishtei hayayin, al ginat habidan. He simply needs to get air. I mean, it's all, he's walking outside just to try to get perspective, so you really get the sense of a person. He doesn't know what to do with himself. That's what I mean. What do you mean? Just have the guy knocked off, whatever. He can't even make a decision. He's so utterly shocked by the whole situation and by the entire edifice crumbling down inside of him that he goes outside. And meanwhile, the Haman amad levakesh al nafsho miester amalka. Ki ra'a ki chalta ve'lav hara'a. Again, me'et hamelach. Which, of course, now has a double meaning. It's not just the fact that it's bad news, but chalta alav hara'a means that in terms of the melech, he was now seen as being a complete and total ra, and that's all that he's able to see in him at this point. What's he going to do? All he can do is be mevakesh al nafsho. Another beautiful reversal from the original command of Mordechai, go into the king, levakesh al nafsho. Of course, which Esther says, that's not the point. Yes, you're right, it's not the point. It's Haman who needs to be mevakesh al nafsho. And he needs to be mevakesh al nafsho from Esther, who was the one that was going to supposedly go in to be mevakesh al nafsho and on Alama. That's another beautiful, beautiful reversal. So every single little piece is being done to him to experience what it was that was really happening. The king comes back in, and the Gemara says, wait, you say Hamelech kam b'chamato, and then you say v'hamelech shav. What that is comparing the return of the king to the leaving of the king. So that means that he must have come back in the same state of fury that he had left, and that nothing had happened, but something must have really kept stoking him, which the Gemara is beautiful. It's hilarious. That ties right in to this incredible farce. He comes out and he finds a gardening company that it was actually Malachi Hashores dressed up in Joe's gardening shop. And they're sitting there uprooting all of his most wonderful plants that he's been looking forward to enjoying in his Ginat Habitat. And they're cutting them down and they got these big machines there and everything's coming up. And he says, what the hell is going on? And they said, Haman said we're supposed to replace him. Ah! Of course, all of this in the context of the eights, Asherim, Mordechai, we're tearing down all the trees. It's such a fantastic tisa of the hilarious about this whole thing. Because for all intents and purposes, anything he could think of, the king, it was Haman in the way of anything that he had really wanted to take in control of every last detail of his life. That's what he's bringing out. So he comes back and he's even more furious because all that he could think of in trying to cool down were things that just got him angrier and angrier. So it might as well have been, Joe's gardening shop. And so he comes back in to find another hilarious thing. Not that Haman had fallen on the couch, but Haman no fell. No fails, as Gemara means. He's continuously falling. Means he's trying to get up, but the Malach goes, no. Why don't you just sit here on Esther? No. Yes. And the king walks in and sees him right there on his queen, on the bed, Asher Esther Allah. So, of course, he says, this is it. Hagam lichvoshet amalkaimi babayit. Have we decided now that you've finished your rape fest that you got me involved in? Now we're going to be raping the queen right here in my house when I'm sitting in front of you. And of course, that was the end. Once he said that, there was no going back. Hadavar yatsami pi amelach, as that came out of the king's mouth, ufnei Haman chafu. They basically had his face covered. You're on your way, buddy. But, I mean, that's the remez of it. And here comes along Charvona, echad min hasarisim lifnei hamelech, and says, gam hinei ha'etz asher asa Haman leMordechai asher diber tov al hamelech. If you want to just keep stoking it. Well, that's exactly the way that he behaves all the time. The moment that he heard somebody saying something good about you, he's been planning taking him down. I can tell you. Again, say Chazal, it's clear that Charvona was originally on Haman's side. How is it clear? Because he says, Omeid bebeit Haman, govoa chamishim Haman. How would he know that? He must have been a member of the group that had given the idea together with Zeresh. Because Haman hadn't even said anything yet. He walked in and the whole thing had twisted around. Now he's dragged back. That means this guy is a member of the inner circle of Haman. So the minute he sees the way things are going, which of course is what it's all about to them. So
it happened to Gaddafi. Why can't it happen to Haman?
And what's interesting is that because of the fact that he says something real, he says, Asher diber tov al HaMalach. This is in the context of the Ra and Tov, so that Chazal tell us that you're supposed to say Gam Charvona Zohur Latov, because this was about Hakarat Tova. And yet the Gemara identifies him as, you know, somebody who would just Av Charvona, says Rabbi Elazar, Rasha Bota Itzahai Aya. He was clearly originally involved in the plan to destroy it. Kivan sher lo nitkaima atzato miyad barach. Immediately changed sides. And that's it.
Opportunist.
An opportunist. And yet an opportunist, in the same way that we saw before, that we call ohavav chachamav, because the idea now is to identify anything that is redeeming. Is this true? What he said was true. What she said was true. The faulty polyphonat, did she recognize that there's something more meaningful than just random events? Then she's Chachamav. Did he point out not just that Haman was a rotten guy and was trying to hurt the king, but that what he did was a destruction of Hakarat Tova and what should have been supportive and so on? Anyone who's involved in something that is real at this point is a Zohur L'Tov, whatever his motivations are. Vayomer HaMelech, Toluhu Alav, hang him on it. Vayitlu et Haman al ha'etz asher hechin l'Mordechai. And so, hachana, hachana, hachana is what it's all about. Memuchan is finally hung on Memuchan's petard. V'chamat HaMelech shachach. And for the first time, shachacha is a double lotion, says the Gemara, of shechicha, achat malcho shel olam, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been keeping his own anger in check over this whole thing. V'achat shalach Hashverosh, and the other one, because up until now, we know that there was a complete lack of closure in his mind. And this is the first time that we have something that is real to him and where he can finally feel that he's begun to assert himself. And that what it is that he was originally dependent on with Haman, having lost everything else in the loss of Vashti, suddenly became real in Esther. And this is the other mandiyama, interestingly enough, in the Gemara, that says, Shtei shechichot halalu. What are the shtei shechichot? Achat shel Vashti ve'achat shel Esther. So in other words, he now recognizes, and this is one of the things that Chazal say Esther was being meramis to before. When she said, Ein hatzar shove benezek hamelech, the simple meaning is, look, he doesn't care about you, and he could have turned this into something that was beneficial for the kingdom. He was just using you for his own petty hatreds. Another pshat is that you think it's a coincidence that this guy is trying to knock me off after he knocked off Vashti? It's not a coincidence. He can't stand any relationships that you have. He needs to be in control of all of your relationships. To whatever extent Ahasuerus had really become dependent on Haman in this fashion, after that first party, it was here, at the end of these parties, that he suddenly was able to get over both of what had happened to him, that had all been essentially manipulated by Haman. And so from this point on, things have to change. The ambivalent cannot remain ambivalent. The ambiguous cannot remain ambiguous. And although Mordechai had attempted before the Vayizagzak HaGedola, Umara, that wasn't enough. to change anyone's awareness of what had happened. And therefore, what needed to happen now is really the collapse of the farce. And there is a tremendous change that is coming up as we go. But before we begin the next parak, let's get back to the sense of ambiguity and ambivalence, which of course here is sourced in Haman's farce. But we know that the Gemara identifies where Haman comes from. And surprisingly, Haman min haTorah minayin, says the Gemara, from the story of Gan Eden itself. Hamin ha'etz asher amarti lecha lo le'achol himeno achalta. Did you eat from that tree? Now we know that the essence of the Eitz Hadad Tov Vara is Eitz Hadad Tov Vara. And of course, that's exactly what we just saw. The first time that we are contrasting in any way Tov Vara in a real way, and where anybody who's able to say something real is rewarded for having a place in a real world, as opposed to the farce that we've been living in. But the truth is, the Eitz Hadad Tov Vara itself is all about farce. Because the way in which the Eitz Hadas Tov Vara works, as the Zohar puts it, is by creating a false imagery, an ambiguous way of looking at things, so that things could be identified as ra. As the Navi says, Hoy ha'omrim latov ra ulara tov. Because that's really what it's all about. When a person falls into the clutches of Yetzer, it's because he's convinced through what he believes are just, you know, minor rationalizations at a complete misidentification of the whole structure of things, such that something really strikes him as being good because he focuses on what elements, as the really the Mishnah puts it, there is a schar aveira and there's a hefsed aveira. There's a schar mitzvah and there's a hefsed mitzvah. The insistence of reality consisting of always measure those two against each other. Because obviously, to tell yourself there's no value to an Avera is ridiculous. There's naturally value to the Avera. Because otherwise, whatever would be totally Ra would have no existence at all. It has to be Yonek on some level from Teva. The problem of the Eitz Hadas Tova Ra, therefore, is only sustainable in farce. Or what we call sometimes in sexual issues, fantasy. Fantasy is farce to some extent. It doesn't hit us as so funny until the whole thing falls apart, and then sometimes it's very painful and certainly ironic. But farce it is in a deep way, because what you're doing is it's impossible to rationalize a particular thing. You need to rationalize a whole way of looking at life that allows for fantasy and that allows for farce. And pufferfish. It's amazing. You just mentioned pufferfish and all of a sudden he's alive. And then the moment you turn aside, he's back asleep again. He really's got to go on stage. Now that farce itself is triggered by v'lo yedboshasha. And of course, that's one of the central themes of the years, the nature of the awareness of vulnerability, busha, and tsniut. To the point where, as Rashi explained to us in the Gemara, the nature of the actual tsniut that we speak of so highly in Rachel was really the unwillingness to let her father know of the nature of a relationship. That means that it's based on the impact that can be had in terms of perceptions. Remarkably, the one guy, and this is all about the person who can afford to be bozeh to all things, vayivez. This goes all the way back to the vayivez Esav et ha'pechorah, as we saw in the Midrash before. It's a boozy ben boozy, someone who is built on looking down at things, utilizing cynicism to make them meaningless, and destroys things with that attitude, which is what Amalek is all about. This person is destroyed by his sensitivity to booze. In a way, that is the deepest v'nahafuch. This is what you had brought up before. That why would someone like that be so sensitive? In other words, somebody who understands what cynicism can do to others ought to be insensitive in the sense of his own feelings about things which are deeply cynical. So the more cynical I am, the less I should be moved by booze. And yet it turns out that one of the most astonishing of the v'nahafochu is that those who were sensitive to busha were capable of complete jumping in to situations which left them vulnerable to the point of madness, what it was that Esther was doing and that Haman, that Mordechai was doing to Haman and so on. Or, for that matter, what it was that David himself had done when bringing the Aron HaBrit, which so enraged Shaul's daughter. And yet the one who will utilize cynicism as a weapon and who is Baz ends up being so completely self-created at all times that he ends up being incapable of responding to what is real and ends up living in a completely artificial reality. And therefore, the moment that any truth shines on him and people see him for what he is, he feels completely naked. Whereas those who really are naked don't mind when that nakedness is there to sacrifice for something that is more valuable and gives them far more than the artificial protection of their clothing would. That, of course, relates to the whole clothing relationship between the Mordechai and Yosef and Shaul and David and the cutting of the clothes and the bizui for begadim and the placement of begadim in terms of the eight sabas, which is all clothes-oriented afterwards, and the relationship of kavod to beged, begadai being mechabdai in the Gemara by Rabbi Yochanan, and the sense of beged itself as being based on the word begida. It's treachery, it's unwillingness to be exposed and to pretend to be something that you are not. When hiddenness, even when it came to Shaul, becomes more important than the value of the vulnerability, and instead it turns into the fear of what might happen to you, then the lack of real vulnerability and the attempt instead to protect and not to face vulnerability becomes your most vulnerable point. And this is what happens to Shaul. He becomes paranoid in exactly the same way that Ahasuerus does. We saw this earlier. This is what leads to his complete downfall. Because now everything that he did not to be exposed, as David says to Michal, so it's all about him, basically. I mean, if he can't let go when there are things that are far more delicate, meaningful, subtle in terms of relationships than his personal destiny, then there never was any real appreciation of the delicacy and the preciousness of that which comes out of what you do. It was all really farce. It was all facing. It was all begida. It was all to be able to maintain a self that would not be hurt, rather than a face, a self that was aware of its own vulnerabilities and willing to jump. And that, of course, is found most importantly where? Maamad Har Sinai. The Na'as of an Ishma is a jump. It's a willingness to be completely and totally vulnerable, which is very difficult to maintain. And we know that certainly one of the main elements of Purim that's coming up is the Kimu v'Kiblo Yahayudi. It means that there was a rediscovery of the true nature of Tzniut. And surprisingly, Tzniut turns out to be central to everything that is Nogea in Kabbalat HaTorah. And we know that because, as the Medrash says, the real underlying reason for why it is that the Luchot were destroyed was because they were too exposed. And of course, the only way that something can be too exposed is when the people that it's exposed to don't really care enough about the relationship. That's what too exposed means. So that there we have the lo yidboshashu turning into kiboshesh moshe l'redet min ahar, which becomes the actual breakdown of the tzniut, because the Medrash puts it gadol ha-tzniut, and the need for tzniut in the luchot shniim, that now we're done by humans in a much less open way, in which Moshe Rabbeinu goes up, and everything is quiet, and everything is calm. And that has to do very, very much with what we saw to be so thematic over here, which is tzniut and busha. But we'll see more of this as we go. But here's the changeover. This is the perek in which reality intrudes.